From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. This week in Trump began on an atypically upbeat note. On Tuesday night, the president gave his first joint address to Congress.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, the First Lady of the United States.
Many in the pundit class gave the president high marks for his use of the palliative presidential platitude.
The speech has gone a long way towards unifying a divided country.
I feel like tonight, Donald Trump became the president of the United States.
I thought last night was unifying. I thought it was presidential.
It's as if the president had one of those gizmos from Men in Black, making them forget everything unpresidential and divisive they've experienced for the past 18 months. Still, the president stood before the Congress, and he did not embarrass it. And that was deeply reassuring for commentators who find comfort in the familiar so they can say something familiar. Pundits have their priorities, and no one knows that better than Trump, as Trevor Noah pointed out on The Daily Show.
You don't have to be a genius to figure out that Donald Trump is playing you. You look at his record. You can study his previous actions. Or you know what else you could do? You could just listen to him when he tells you that he's gonna fake it.
I can act as presidential as anybody that's ever been president.
Presidential's easy. You know what a presidential is? I walk on. Here's what I... Ladies and gentlemen of Waterbury, it is a great honor to be with you this morning.
Yeah. Fake like you're presidential, and people will believe you're presidential. This was the plan all along.
But the president had barely a news cycle to bask in that presidential glow. On Wednesday night, he was menaced again with that perpetually falling piano, the Russian connection. This time it landed on Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who in January was asked by Senator Al Franken if he would investigate alleged ties between the Trump campaign and Russia.
I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I didn't have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
On Wednesday, a rather different story emerged.
The Washington Post now reporting tonight that Attorney General Jeff Sessions, when he was still a senator and an advisor to the Trump campaign, had meetings with Russia's ambassador to the U.S., but did not disclose them during his confirmation hearings.
Sessions settled for just making himself scarce.
I have now decided to recuse myself from any existing or future investigations of any matter relating in any way to the campaigns for President of the United States.
The news about Sessions' Russian rendezvous coincided with another revelation.
New reporting tonight about what the Obama administration learned in its final days about Russian interference in the presidential election.
The report says the officials wanted to leave a clear trail of intelligence before the Trump administration took over.
As the New York Times reported, Obama administration officials purposefully documented and spread information across the government about Russian interference in the election. They did this to alert future investigators and to ensure that the information would not crumble to dust in a presidential broom closet. National security and intelligence reporter Matthew Rosenberg co-wrote the Times story. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with the what. Explain what information Obama administration officials scrambled to preserve.
The actual details of that information are still really murky. You know, this stuff is incredibly classified. Even telling us that it exists risks going to jail. We do know a few things. We know that there were contacts between Trump associates and Russian officials throughout the campaign. Some officials say they're intelligence people, but that's a pretty murky designation in Russia where even a lot of top business people, if they're close to Putin, they're kind of in the intelligence world.
They have many jobs to do.
Exactly. And we also know that there were a lot of conversations intercepted between officials in the Kremlin and other places in which the Russians themselves were debating how far to go with this.
You also had some information from American allies, the British and the Dutch, who described meetings in European cities.
Some European allies, we believe there were a number of them, who were hearing about meetings through their own sources and tipping off the Americans saying, hey, what's this going on here? We don't really understand this.
Now, you described a number of strategies that Obama White House officials used to create this paper trail of intelligence. For instance, simply sending packages to members of Congress?
I think we want to be clear that this was beyond the White House. These are senior officials in the intelligence community, in the national security world, some in the White House. And one of the things they did, we know of at least one instance, we believe there were others, a Senate committee requested information on Russian election meddling worldwide. And a few days before the end of the administration, they got delivered a cache of folders, all stamped secret.
We should mention that secret is really not that high of a classification.
It's not. And that's, I think, where you get into what they were really trying to do. Step back and look at the context here. Through the summer into the fall, there's the hacking, there's the release of the emails, there's questions about voter rolls being probed by hackers, but there's no real sense of exactly how big a campaign this is going on. And it's only into November and December that people in the administration say they begin to put all the pieces together and see the scope and depth and breadth of what they believe the Russians had done. They then engage in this very kind of almost last minute rush to kind of get information out there in ways that's not just left there kind of on the cutting room floor and hard to find and hard to access. And so one of the ways you do that is you take the raw intelligence, the actual intercepts, human intelligence reports, and you process that into what they call a finished report. And you try and get as low as level of classification on that finished report as possible, and then move that around the intelligence community, as wide an audience for it as you can.
You also reported that Obama officials and I guess officials in other agencies asked questions of the intelligence agencies in order to get certain answers on the record.
Yeah, and that was part of that leaving a trail for investigators.
Mm-hmm.
You get a briefing every day. You ask your briefer a specific question to which you know the answer, but you also know the briefer's got to write that down. And that becomes part of an archive, and that any investigator in the House or the Senate is going to know to look for those archives, and it will lead them to information you want them to find.
And your sources within the administration made clear that the reason why they did this was to ensure that it would be very difficult for the new administration to come in and just completely bury it all.
Oh, absolutely. Some of these sources were very upfront about this. We want this out there because we want people to know it's there and they should go look for it.
You write about how the intelligence collecting and documenting continued up until the final days of the Obama administration. And you explained that it wasn't until they had thoroughly put the pieces together that the Russian government was trying to directly influence the election in favor of Trump.
Yeah.
And they didn't figure that out until that late.
Yeah, we were pretty shocked by that. I think, you know, in the public's mind, there's a sense that there's a big thing going on. But when you think about it, you know, what exactly our government thought it was, at least, wasn't really clear until into December and January. You have the cyber attacks on the DNC, which took place a long time ago. Then you have another element of the campaign, which is the pushing of the stolen material out, WikiLeaks, Guccifer. And the third element was the probing and hacking into state electoral systems and the stealing of voter rolls there. That happened in September, and that was really the first thing that truly alarmed the White House. But at the time, they thought it was because the Russians were trying to find ways to muck around and raise questions about what would go on Election Day, that they were going to try and disrupt the actual voting or cast doubt on that voting. That's obviously not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing throughout is they're listening to Russians who are equally as convinced as most Americans were that Hillary Clinton was probably going to win. The Russians weren't thinking that they were winning this for Trump. They were as surprised as everyone else.
But they didn't like Hillary.
The Russians really disliked Clinton. And so this was a lot more about weakening the U.S., disrupting democracy, and overcoming Clinton than it was about Trump.
The meetings that the appointed Trump team had denied having with the Russians could have come out more directly. Why not just a more straightforward statement about these things from people who knew? Is it because the material is classified?
Exactly. As long as the material remains classified and you have a clearance, means you can see it, you can't talk about it. But we talked to a lot of people, and these are both political appointees and career officials, not just a bunch of Obama partisans, who seemed very unsatisfied with the level of classification and the inability or unwillingness to declassify more information before they left office.
Mm-hmm.
I think they knew, and that's one of the big problems here, is that what the public's seen so far is not particularly satisfying. We've seen a lot of very strong language. We've seen some details, most of which have leaked out, but we don't actually know what this evidence is. So we've got these competing claims.
Right. The Trump team has denied that the campaign had any contact with the Russians. They blame the intelligence agencies for cooking this up. Your story reports that the Obama administration was just concerned that this whole thing was going to be buried, so it left clues. And then there's the conspiracy theory that we saw on Thursday in the Daily Caller. The headline read, "Confirmed, Obama administration sabotaged Trump's transition to the White House."
I love when the Daily Caller uses us to confirm what they want confirmed. Look, I find conspiracies pretty hard to believe. Usually it's just incompetence. But in this case, it's a bunch of officials, some of them probably working together, who were genuinely freaked out. I mean, I spoke to these people. I've known them a while, some of them. They were really freaked out by what they were seeing, and they wanted to make sure that investigations could progress. But the Trump campaign isn't entirely wrong either. You know, there is some sour grapes here.
Everyone has their motive. I mean, Deep Throat was annoyed that Nixon didn't promote him inside of the FBI. But the motives don't matter, right? It's the value of the information.
Exactly. Look, sources are really imperfect people. I've had great sources who were right and left-wing nuts, who had detestable views of the world, but they provided incredibly valuable information. No matter how you feel about the people we're talking to, and I wish I could tell you more about them, if what they're saying is true, and there are a lot of them saying the same thing, independent of each other, what they're providing is really stunning and really interesting.
But it's based on secret information that comes from almost entirely anonymous sources. And as you wrote, it makes an independent public assessment of competing Trump and Obama administration claims impossible.
You know, it is the great frustration of reporting in Washington, especially on national security matters, is that you're dealing with stuff that is sensitive and that, again, your sources risk their freedom to talk to you about it. We're careful explaining that we have a lot of sources on this. We're careful in explaining why the sources are talking to us. We're trying to kind of show as much as we can to give some confidence that we're not just kind of making this up or talking to people who have no credibility to speak on these matters.
Well, the White House spokesman, Sean Spicer, kind of echoed the Daily Caller when he said, "The only new piece of information that has come to light is that political appointees in the Obama administration have sought to create a false narrative to make an excuse for their own defeat in the election. There continues to be no there there." Are you convinced that there's enough there there?
I don't know what to think. People, some still in the government, seem very convinced there's something there. And if I were the Trump administration and there was no there there, I'd probably want a pretty thorough investigation to end this all.
The fact is that no intelligence official seems to be claiming on or off the record that they have actual evidence of active collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government, at least not yet.
No. What they do tell us, though, is that, you know, stuff was pouring in until the day they left office, and that it still is coming in, apparently. What they are absolutely thoroughly convinced of is of this Russian campaign. There's no doubt about it at this point in their estimation.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump stuff's murkier because there were a lot of meetings, but you don't know exactly what went on in all of them.
So do you think that maybe we're making too much of this?
No, because, you know, in the end, this is why you don't have meetings like this and why you don't deny things even when they're apparent to everyone is because appearances matter. This doesn't look good. And I think the administration does owe American people straightforward answers about what exactly is going on here. And they say they're being straightforward, but, you know, it comes out in January that their former national security advisor, Mike Flynn, had been talking to the Russian ambassador the day that the Obama administration imposed sanctions, December 29th. And the initial White House response today, it was one phone call, text message, and it was just about logistics for a call with Putin. Comes out a few weeks later that it was a lot of phone calls. It was about the sanctions and telling the Russians, don't worry, we'll be in power soon. And Flynn had misled the vice president. And that the White House had known this for 2 weeks. They had known what they had told the public was untrue.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got Jeff Sessions, who told Congress he never met with any Russians during the campaign. Turns out he had met the ambassador twice. Now he says, well, we weren't meeting about campaign things. You're getting this pattern here of they say nothing happened, then you find out something did. They say, well, it's no big deal. Then you find out it was. And they say, well, the leaks are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think until that kind of pattern ends or there are some answers about what exactly is going on here, these questions are going to persist, and they should persist. They absolutely should persist.
Okay, so now as we talk on Thursday, obviously, Flynn is long gone. Yes. Sessions has recused himself from any investigation into the Russian hacking or connections with the Trump administration. You have also reported that Jared Kushner, advisor to Trump, and his son-in-law was with Flynn, at least during one of those meetings. So we have a couple of shoes that have dropped. Do you anticipate any more in the near future?
I suspect we'll be finding out a lot more, unless this is some giant conspiracy and we're all being played for the fool, which I don't believe to be the case, and I really hope it isn't. I can say this much, that I've learned to stop predicting what's going on over there. Just have no idea. You know, me and a colleague were looking into some other totally unrelated story, but involved a very senior job for somebody. There's a lot of confusion about it. Eventually, the person who's the subject of our reporting, who was up for this very senior job, called us up to say, hey, you guys know what's on this job? Because I'm getting a lot of mixed signals from the White House. And we're just like, I mean, yeah, that's not the way this is supposed to work, sir. You know, I mean.
Matthew, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Matthew Rosenberg covers intelligence and national security for The New York Times.
Coming up, media manipulations at home and abroad, as usual.
This is On the Media.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.